You're listening to The Big Show with George Russick and Matty Rose on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Playoffs will start today with the play-in games. And to speak about that, we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk to NBA writer for Sportsnet, Kai Gamage. Kai, what's going on this morning? Thanks again for the time. Always a pleasure when you join me.
Oh, man, happy to be here. First of all, got to say, thanks for walking me out to the to some Tom Sawyer right there. I feel like a Von Erich twin. That was pretty awesome.
That's all credit to our producer here for the day, Connor. That's him for picking the tracks. He does a great job.
Thank you, Connor. Super hyped.
Kai, we'll start with the Raptors here. When I was asking you to come on, you mentioned that we are expecting a press conference from Masai Ujiri to put a bow on this season for the Toronto Raptors. Is there anything we should expect or anything you'd like to hear from Masai today?
Well, I think he's most likely, I mean, it's either today or tomorrow that he will show up.
Sure.
But I'm pretty excited for this one, honestly. I think the last year, the Raptors were coming off a pretty dark season. Everyone was just really confused about the direction of the team. No one really knew what Masai was going to say. And once he got up there, he started talking about selfishness, about like self-reflection, about individuals, and just it was a dark press conference. It felt like there wasn't really any direction, any idea of what this team wanted to do, whether or not they knew who they themselves were, and it just felt like a mess. This year, I'm expecting a lot more of a concerted approach for the team, for the staff, for the front office to kind of be on the same page. In yesterday's press conferences, they had exit interviews with all the players, and all of them kind of spoke on the same sorts of ideas. All the messaging was like very similar. There was a lot of love for the potential that this offensive scheme around Darko Rajakovic could bring. There was a lot of love for the vets. Everyone was kind of touting Scotty as being like this next leader, and everyone kind of knew that this season was a mess, right? It was hampered by injuries. Like, you couldn't have more happen in a season than what happened to the Raptors this
right.
go around, right? And everyone kind of knew that. Everyone knew that there are these external factors, these other things that everyone had to worry about. But the messaging stayed the same for the team yesterday. And I expect that to be a lot of the same today with Darko, tomorrow with Masai. I'm expecting everyone to kind of be on the same page. And I think that there's a renewed hope around this Raptors team, right? Despite the record, mm-hmm. despite how horrendous the basketball looked at the end of the season, it felt like there was, suffice to say, like a shared goal of like, maybe we're bad, but we're growing together. And it seems that's where the team's headed, and they understand that and they've accepted that fate. And I expect the messaging today and tomorrow to be a lot of that as well.
Yeah. You mentioned down the stretch there how it got a little bit of tough. And, dude, they're throwing out some lineups there where I was, you know, Basketball Reference was getting a workout as I was trying to see, you know, who is actually starting these games for the Raptors. But down the stretch here, what do you think the biggest positive you could take away from this Raptors season? Obviously, Scotty coming out as a star within the NBA. They made some good deals as well, getting RJ Barrett. But in your mind, what do you think the biggest positive was for this young and rebuilding team?
I think that they found themselves in a lot of ways. I think that they understand how they intend to play under Darko, right? Like, at the end of last year under Nurse, the entirety of last year, honestly, under Nurse, I think everybody was kind of confused about how this team really plays. Like, everyone's high energy. There's a lot of transition offense, a lot of transition defense, but their numbers in those sorts of sets weren't actually that great. But towards the end of this season, we really started to see Darko's scheme kind of come together. We started to see the ball movement that he wanted to implement, this more Eurocentric style of basketball. And even the players yesterday were talking about the fact that the team is starting to feel more European, starting to revolve a lot more around ball movement, a lot less ISO. And I think that the team finding that identity, particularly like when the players were still there near the end of the year, I think that that is an incredible sign for the Raptors going forward. I think that finding your identity, like regardless of the results at this point in time, because like, look, it's a young team. They know they're not there yet. But once you find that identity, that's such a huge building block for where you want this team to go. It impacts the free agents that you go for, the draft picks that you're going to get. And the Raptors have three in the first 31 picks, potentially, depending on how the lottery shakes out, right? So they're understanding who they are. They understand what types of players they want. They understand what types of players they might go get in the draft and free agency. And they're understanding how to build around the core pieces that are in place, and guys like RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickly, should he resign, which most like hope, here's the hoping he will, and Scotty Barnes, of course. So I think that the biggest takeaway from this year is that the team found themselves, regardless of the results, the team understood who they want to be.
Right. And, you know, just kind of building off of that, the Raptors did struggle a lot coming down the stretch here, but, You and I have even just discussed a little bit that this is a new era for Toronto Raptors basketball, and obviously that losing is hard for anyone to get over. But how important was it for them to lock up that first round pick for them in this draft? Because Toronto is going to have to be a team that builds from within, similar to how they built stars with Scottie Barnes and Pascal Siakam in the past.
I mean, there's a lot of messaging going around right now about how this is maybe the worst draft class since 2013, since the Anthony Bennett class. But obviously the Anthony Bennett class had Giannis Antetokounmpo going 15th overall, right? So there's a lot of potential, I think, in this draft. Like, you might not have that superstar on paper that you see right away that pops off your screen. You don't have your your Paolo Banqueros. You don't even have your Paolo Banqueros or Anthony Edwards, where, like, there's clearly potential there, and you can see them blossoming into a superstar, but maybe they'll just take like a year or something of work. This class is a lot more focused around role players and around guys that fit into systems. So a lot of teams are going to be drafting based on fit. And that's what the Raptors need, right? Getting that sixth overall pick is pretty massive. Because it's such a weird draft class, there's no real consensus about who's going to be going in that top five. We're hearing names like Alex Sarr, Zachary Risacher, Nikola Topic, Rob Dillingham. Like, it's a total mess. There's been no consensus number one all year, and I think that's a good thing for the Raptors, because you could land that sixth pick, and the guy that they might have evaluated as number one could still be there, right? And then once you get to 17, which is potentially where that Pacers pick could lie, depending on how the first round series against the Bucks shakes out, that's also a really solid pick, right? Like, again, there's no consensus about where guys are going to fall. So you could still get a center that you maybe rate highly at that spot. Someone like Eve Missy from Baylor. Yeah. Or you get like a solid forward, right? Like, there's a lot of potential for guys just going all over the board.
Is the center spot or one of those forward positions the fit that they are going to be looking for? Not asking you for any specific players that they're going to look for with that top six pick. What is the fit that this Raptors squad is looking for to add a young, nice piece to their lineup?
Yeah, I'd definitely be looking at the center spot. Yeah. Jakob Poeltl obviously was absolutely stellar when he was playing. And then without them, I think they had like, what, a 2-23 record, something just horrendous without Jakob Poeltl. So obviously the need for a big man, like someone that'll put the lid on the rim, is massive for the Raptors. So if they get someone maybe in the top six, someone like Donovan Klingon from the Huskies, from UConn, that'd be a pretty solid shout. But I don't know. I think that going after a five, it kind of entails the idea that you could see Jakob Poeltl as expendable, which I don't really mind going into next season. Like, he might not fit the timeline. Obviously, he's a needed piece, but going after a young center, someone that you can build up, someone that you can turn into something, someone that can become that Jakob Poeltl when Jakob Poeltl isn't there, I think that that would be extraordinarily important. This team got demolished on the boards this year, so any forward, any big, any good rebounding front court player, I think, is definitely the biggest need for the Raptors going into this draft.
Kai Gamage, NBA writer for Sportsnet, is joining me on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. It's hour four of the Big Show, and it's GVP along with you here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Let's get to some playoff stuff here. The play-in games will go down tonight out west. Is there a team we see tonight out of the West playing games, or I'll even throw in the East teams as well? Can any of these teams really make a shot at taking a long run here in the playoffs? For instance, I feel like the Lakers don't really care about seeding. They just want to make the dance. I just wanted to get your thoughts if any of these teams could really make a solid run if they're able to make it through the play-in here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always scared of the Lakers, right? Like, it's with the way that Anthony Davis and LeBron James have been playing this year, like, it's pretty clear that those are two of the top 15 players in the league. And, like, you can't ever count them out. My one concern, though, is that I know there's been, like, this weird kind of talk around, like, oh, could the Lakers potentially tank this first play-in game and go for the 8 seed instead? I think that there's a legitimate argument behind that.
Really?
Because, yeah, the Nuggets are a wagon, right?
Yeah, like, I understand that. I'm just always scared about when you're trying to pick your seeding and you're trying to lose games. That's where things get a little hairy, Kai.
It's scary, right? Like, you don't want to run into Steph Curry in a one-off game, right? Like, let's say Steph Curry and the Warriors beat the Kings in the 9-10 play-in game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have to face someone like that, a team like that, in a one-off game. It's the Golden State Warriors. They have a more winning pedigree than the Lakers do, right?
Yeah.
So it is a scary proposition, but I just don't think that the Lakers go anywhere even close to the second round. Do they face if they face the Nuggets?
That's right.
I think that, like, I don't want to talk down on the Thunder here, right? But this is a team that is young. It's the second youngest team in the league. Obviously, Shea. I think that people kind of doubt him because they haven't seen him in the playoffs. But we've seen him excel in these high pressure games at the World Cup. Like, we know that he's there for the big moments. That shouldn't be a secret to any Canadian basketball fan, right? But
yeah,
it's still an untested team, and they definitely do not have the size to match up with the Lakers, right? Anthony Davis, like, is going to eat Chet Holmgren alive. They don't have anyone past Chet Holmgren to really take on someone like LeBron James, someone like Rui Hachimura. They just don't have the size, the strength, the physicality to maybe keep up in an intense 7-game series. So I don't want to tell the Lakers to do something like that. Obviously, it's always risky, but I think that that's really the only shot we have of a Western play-in team maybe making it past the first round. In the East, it might be different, right? Because it's just the Miami Heat are there. You never really know how far they can take it in terms of guys that are just playoff performers and, like, who you would take on your team once the playoffs roll around. I think that Jimmy Butler probably is in the top 6 guys in the league for that sort of situation. And then Joel Embiid is obviously there as well in the 7-8 play-in game. So have fun with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that the team in the East have a lot more of a chance to maybe make it past the first round, to maybe move on to really test the top seeds in the East. Whereas in the West, I think it's kind of a wash unless the Lakers get the 8 seed.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I wanted to ask you a bit more about the defending champs, the Denver Nuggets. Out of any of the teams that have had amazing seasons out West, we just talked a bit about the Thunder. I'll throw the Timberwolves or the Clippers even in there. Which one of those teams do you think could stack up well against the Nuggets and maybe even give them a run for their money if they end up matching up against each other here in the postseason?
Well, the best test they had last year was actually in the first round against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Where they went to 6 games, I believe it was. They just have the size to actually take on a team like the Nuggets, right? Like, that's the way that Denver just demolished people, other than, you know, Jokic being an absolute stud. They have the size to really just beat people up down low with Anthony Gordon, with Michael Porter Jr., with obviously Nikola Jokic. They're huge. But the Minnesota Timberwolves have, I don't want to call them the Twin Towers here. They're not that good, but Karl-Anthony Towns has been stellar on defense this year. Rudy Gobert is going to be the defensive player of the year. Anthony Edwards has no fear attacking the rim and is a great perimeter defender. Then you got guys like Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Kyle Anderson, Jaden McDaniels, who are some of the best perimeter defenders in the league, and they're long. So I think that that's really the team that could give the Nuggets the best test. Otherwise, I'm actually really looking at the Mavericks right now. I just don't think that there's a soul on earth that can stop Luka Doncic. And the way that they've been playing this year and, like, down this stretch run, I don't see
Is Luka enough with
really.
Them, though?
Is he enough to just be a one-man show to get this done for them is the thing? Like, I know that Kyrie's his sidekick, but you mentioned size. I'm just not sure if I see it in Dallas.
I mean, Daniel Gafford had that one stretch where he just didn't miss a shot for like 5 games. Fair. Right? Like, this is, he's one of the best rim finishing bigs, one of the best rollers in the league. I think his pairing with Derek Lively has been really, really like awesome to watch. Like, considering that they usually play a more five out offense with a lot of spacing, having those two guys actually kind of take the floor where they don't provide any of that has given them like a new level to their game. I'm really intrigued by the Dallas Mavericks. Actually, I think that they've got the shooting to keep up with anyone. They've got the star power that you kind of need to succeed in playoff situations like these. Luka Doncic is an absolute killer in the postseason. I just don't think that there's, like, again, like, it's the same kind of vein as Jimmy Butler here, right? Where it's just, if I'm taking a guy for a playoff game or for a playoff series, Luka Doncic is absolutely in my top three players that I want on my team. That dude has shredded people in the playoffs. What was it? Back in like the 2022 playoffs, he demolished the Suns, right? Gave a good fight against the Warriors. I have trouble betting against a guy like Luka Doncic.
What team do you feel like has the most to prove this postseason? What is a team that feels like they need to get to an Eastern Conference final, for example, or an NBA final to justify having a successful postseason run? Who do you think that team is in either conference?
It's got to be the Bucks, right?
I was thinking Celtics. With that young core, really, is it about time that maybe they get to an NBA final? Well, I guess they have, but, you know, or they win have, an NBA finals, but yeah.
I mean, I think that their goal is championship or bust for sure, but I think that they're kind of positioned to keep it going for the next few years, right? They locked up Kristaps Porzingis. They locked up Drew Holiday with a 4-year, 135 extension. They still got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I don't think that team's really going anywhere. I think that obviously their goal is finals or bust, but
yeah.
You don't have the external pressure that I think the Bucks have right now. I think that the Bucks, the messaging around that team has just been pretty terrifying of late. I mean, they dropped down to the 3 seed after losing their spot to the Knicks. Giannis is out for game one against the Pacers, potentially longer. Damian Lillard is not, I think, or the pairing between Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo, I think, is not what people wanted it to be.
Not defensively, at least.
Definitely not, yeah. It's been brutal, man. But obviously the messaging around coaching has just been horrific this year. They're better with Adrian Griffin than they've been with Doc Rivers, which is just pretty embarrassing. And then you actually also have to look at Doc, right? Like, this is another guy with how many playoff failures on his resume.
Right.
It's just, you can't have another one. And then, like, the Celtics were fine last year in the playoffs, right? Like, obviously they lost to the Heat in, 7 games, I believe, in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But we're talking about a Bucks team that was knocked out in the first round, right? Like,
yeah, you're not wrong. I just bring up the Celtics. It feels like that it should be their time that this core wins a ring. That's the only reason why I bring them up. But
no, I mean, I 100% agree, right? Like, this is when they should be contending. Like, I mean, they've been the star team of the year all season long. They've been incredible. And I think that all they've really thought about is the playoffs, right? Like, this is a team that's primed for it. They have more than enough experience in situations like these and games like these. Like, they're obviously ready. It's just that I think that the stakes are so high in Milwaukee. There's a lot more potential for things kind of blowing up. Like, obviously, Giannis signed an extension this offseason after the Damian Lillard trade. But, well, Damian's still up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's just a lot more potential of things blowing up in Milwaukee than there are in Boston, right? Like, Boston could maybe lose in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they'd still run it back with the same team next year.
Yeah.
Milwaukee, I don't know. It's an aging core. It's guys that maybe don't even like playing there. Dame has made it clear, I think, through weird reading between the lines that maybe he's not entirely sold on being there. They're facing a Pacers team that has had their number all season long. They don't have Giannis for round one, and they don't have Giannis for game one, and this is how they lost last year to the Heat because Giannis was injured. I think that there's just a lot of potential for things blowing up, and if things go wrong, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of good points with the Milwaukee Bucks. I think they're a super interesting team as well. Last one for you here, Kai. Some Olympic news. The United States announced 11 of their 12-man Olympic roster. It's headlined by LeBron James and Steph Curry. What were your reactions to the Americans really loading up for the Olympics next summer?
I think it's pretty fun. I'm excited. Yeah. I think that, one of the best memories from when I was a kid was the Redeem Team, right?
Like,
it's just lovely to see all the best players playing, and like, you're telling me I get to watch one more LeBron James run at the Olympics? Like, yeah, I'm a big LeBron fan, right? But
so am I.
This is right there. This is a beautiful thing. This is wonderful to see LeBron James donning the red, white, and blue one more time. I think it's pretty sweet. Canada's going to win though. But
you think Canada's got a chance at meddling? Like, you know, the way that Canada has been progressing and, you know, SGA being their superstar and all that, what do you give Canada's chances of meddling next summer?
Yeah, I'd give them a pretty solid chance here. I think that they've got the second most NBA talent of all the teams that are going to be playing there. Obviously, France is a pretty big threat. I think I'd be a lot more scared of them had Joel Embiid not sold out to play for the Americans. I think that they definitely stand a chance here, right? Like, FIBA Bowl is always pretty scary. You don't really want to face, I guess, Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic in really their natural environment. Like, this is what they're raised on. This is sending them, like, this is basically home court advantage for them in a way. It's a scary proposition, but I just don't see how Canada doesn't medal. Like, this team is serious. I said they took on the States in the World Cup. Like, this is obviously a team that wants it. SGA has the chance of taking the floor in most matchups and being the best player on the floor. I think that, like, really, I mean, we're seeing the MVP race kind of shake out right now, where most games, other than 2 to 3 guys in the league, SGA is the best player on the floor. And in one-off games, like, I'd be scared of going against him.
Kai Gamage, NBA writer for Sportsnet. Kai, always appreciate it when you stop by the show. Enjoy the games tonight, and let's do it again soon, eh?
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Kai Gamage on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. We're going to take a quick break here on The Big Show. Around the corner, going to replay our chat we had with Luke Gazdick. We kind of touched on all things NHL with Luke. Some, McDavid hitting 100 assists for the first time since Wayne Gretzky did so, or Mario Lemieux did it. But he joined some elite company, joining Gretzky and Bobby Orr. Also touched on all the other headlines around the NHL with Luke. So that'll be straight ahead. Keep it locked. The Big Show continues right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.